Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Tom Butler.
And I'm Brendan Duffy.
You're listening to the James Bond A to Z podcast.
Join us on this journey of discovery across the world of the 007 movies as we take an encyclopedic look at cinema's greatest spy films.
We'll learn about the people who made them in front of the camera and behind, from Ken Adam to Mac Zorin, with the occasional detour down a few rabbit holes. And we'll sometimes be joined by guests with unique insight into the world of Bond.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the James Bond brand, Eon, or the Fleming Estate. We do our best to make sure the information is accurate, but sometimes we do get it wrong. If you want to correct us on something or add some more detail, email us on podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to the James Bond A to Z podcast, where we have reached the letter T. My name is Tom Butler, and joining me as we explore the characters and creatives of the Bond world that fall under the 20th letter of the alphabet, it's the totally tubular Mr. Brendan Duffy.
Hello, what is that? Tubular?
That's a good one. The letter T is going to be a huge letter for us. We've got six movie specials coming up after this one. The Living Daylights, The Man with the Golden Gun, The Spy Who Loved Me, The World Is Not Enough, Thunderball, Tomorrow Never Dies. I don't know why our forward thinking on that one was, I don't know what I was thinking, to be honest. But before we get to those, we're going to have a look at the people who fall under the letter T from the Bond world. And they include some terrible tyrants, some talented types, some tremendous totty. Sorry, I know. Yeah, cancel me now. Some top-notch talent. But first, let's kick things off with a tantalising thriller.
T is for Tamahori, Lee Tamahori, the director of Die Another Day. He was actually born Warren Lee Tamahori. He was born in 1950 and he is from New Zealand. He's of Maori ancestry on his father's side and he's British on his mother's. Started his career prior to working in the film industry. He was an artist and a photographer. Moving into the 80s, he actually found his own production company and they made commercials and he made loads of high profile ones, won an award for best commercial of the decade in the 80s.
Wow. And
that propelled him to then be able to make bigger things. His debut feature film was a film called Once Were Warriors. And it's about a Maori family, so it was shot in New Zealand. Have you seen it?
No, I'm aware of it. I've got it on DVD, and I'm aware of the imagery from it. It's got the guys with the tattoos all over their faces, haven't they?
Yes, it's very, very violent, very gritty film. That got him recognition, and it enabled him to work in Hollywood and work on bigger films. Mulholland Falls in 1996, The Edge in 1997. And he also directed an episode of The Sopranos.
Ooh.
And Along Came a Spider in 2001. That's that one. That one I have seen.
The one with Angelina Jolie and Morgan Freeman.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So by this time, you know, he's making films with a bit more money behind. 2002 comes along and obviously he gets the Die Another Day gig. following that up, he moved on to the sequel to Triple X, which was called State of the Union in 2005. Have you seen that one? Have you seen either of those? I think I must have seen Triple X.
I think I'd seen Triple X. Yeah, I remember it being sort of quite a mindless, sort of brainless sort of movie.
So I just assume the second one is more of the same. Really? Yeah. We have covered him in the Dying of the Day episode. You know, the process of making that, and you know, things weren't all ideal on the set of Dying of the Day. But he had an interesting idea, which I don't think we did cover. And in an interview at the time the film was released, he said that my idea was basically there have been several Bonds and it's just a code name. Even James Bond is not the guy's name. That's the way I've always been able to view these things, from when Connery left and Lazenby and Moore took over and right up to Brosnan. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I don't believe... I'm not into the codename theory. I think it's a load of nonsense.
Me either. But he basically was using it because there were rumours at the time, Dying of the Day, that we were going to get a cameo from Connery.
Right.
If you remember.
Yes.
And so he said that means either Connery either died or retired and so on. So following that, you can possibly have two Bonds in a movie. What happened to the others? I thought if there was a scene where Bond meets one of the originals, an older 007 who got out of the service and acted as a mentor to him. I mean, I think if he'd have done that in Dying of the Day, it would have potentially killed the franchise.
Yes. Actually, interestingly, I've been reading about Living Daylights for a coming episode, and their original idea for Living Daylights as a prequel was that Bond would join MI6 and be trained by the older 007. So there is precedent for it.
Wow.
And also we get a bit of that in No Time to Die, don't we? When there's two 007s, or at least the new 007 with the old 007. But we spoke enough about Die Another Day and the crazy thing that movie did. I don't think it needed anything as more crazy to add it in.
No, well, the producers shot that down. So there you go. That's Lee Tamahori.
T is for Tanaka, Tiger Tanaka, played by Tetsuro Tamba. So the most T person you could imagine.
Wow, that's like won an award, isn't it?
That's got to be the first time we've had a quadruple T, quadruple letter on the podcast. Obviously, I can't even say it. Obviously, Tiger Tanaka is the You Only Live Twice character, and he is the head of the Japanese Secret Service who helps Bond on his mission in Japan. And his headquarters, I love this, are inside his private underground train that travels around Tokyo. I think such a cool move for that movie. This is one of those, though, Tiger Tanaka, that when I looked at the podcast and including it in the list, I thought, yeah, I know this one. I'll get this done quite easily. But Brendan, buckle up because you're in for a crazy ride here.
Okay.
So first of all, just talking about Tiger Tanaka, he also has a ninja training school where he teaches ninjutsu to Bond. And he also helps him to become Japanese in order to marry Kissy Suzuki. And then he helps Bond to attack Blofeld's lair. The character was based on the character from the Ian Fleming book, of course. And in the film, you know, we've got this actor, Tetsuro Tamba, but he's voiced by Robert Rietti, a voice actor who we covered very recently on the podcast, if you're interested in learning more about that. But talking about Tetsuro Tamba, here's where it gets a bit bonkers. But he was born Shozaburo Tamba in Tokyo in 1922, and he worked as an interpreter with the Allies during World War II before becoming an actor in the 1950s. And he made more than 200 films. And he at one point in an interview, he admitted that he'd never refused a film role, and he'd also never memorized a script. And he also said he'd never sat through an entire film that he'd appeared in. So big name in the Japanese film industry. He had been under contract to Shintoho Studios and then went freelance, working in lots of different types of movies, period movies, gore movies. Some of the films that he worked on include The Last Days of Planet Earth, Pigs and Battleships, But it was in 1961 that Tetsuro Tamba was introduced to Western audiences in a film called Bridge to the Sun, which was directed by Etienne Perrier. And then in 1964, he appeared in a film called The Seventh Dawn, which was directed by Lewis Gilbert, who we know went on to direct Bond films. When they were looking to cast the actor to play Tiger Tanaka, the United Artists boss Bud Ornstein met with the legendary Japanese actor Toshiro Mifune to convince him to play the role. But unfortunately, he was already committed to appear in the film Grand Prix. So they couldn't get the man they wanted. Toshiro Mifune would have been amazing to have a legend like that in the film. But and he would have been more fitting for the age of Tiger Tanaka. Because if there is one sort of complaint about Tamba in You Only Live Twice, is that he's perhaps a little bit too young to be the head of the Secret Service in Japan. But by the by, when Lewis Gilbert was filming in Japan for You Only Live Twice, the stipulation by the local government was that they use a lot of Japanese talent. So Lewis Gilbert basically called on his friend Tamba, Tetsuro Tamba, to help him with translating while they were auditioning the local talent. And he was the one that suggested Akiko Wakabayashi for the film and also Mi Hama. But when Mifune basically turned the role down, Tamba got the role by default, really. He was the man they knew in Japan. He got the role. So, I mean, no real interviews with him talking about being in You Only Live Twice. I think he's a great character in that movie. I don't know about you.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like the sort of the equivalent of Bond, isn't he?
Yeah.
And they have a nice sort of relationship that starts off a bit combative, but develops into mutual respect, doesn't it?
I like anyway, that initial meeting of them. I think it's
Yeah, I think it is fantastic. Anyway, so post You Only Live Twice, this is where it goes a bit bonkers. So in the 1980s, Tetsuro Tamba became the leader of the Dai Ryan Kai, which translates as the Great Spirit World, which is a spiritual cult movement, which he made propaganda movies based upon his theories of the afterlife. And in 1989, he released a full-length film called Dairakai, depicting what happens to the spirits of people who die in Japan. There's a really great, interesting write-up about this movie online, which you can find by Googling it. But I'll just read an extract on it. So, according to one of Tamba's 42 books on the subject, heaven is about 1,000 kilometres directly above the earth and rotates with it. When Japanese die, they naturally go to a Japanese-esque place, Tamba assures his ethnically conscious followers. But, he adds, as though to lure the internationally spirited, because there is no concept of time or space throughout the spirit world, anyone who wants to go to the from the Japanese village to the American village can be there in an instant. Tamba promises nothing less than everlasting youth and beauty for the good people on earth. Visions of his heavens and hells vary with the artist, but most illustrated books show youthful, even erotic spirits rising from the deathbeds of the wrinkled elderly, usually women, the middle-aged variety of which constituted most of the audience in the theatre showing his film. So he basically wanted to, he was like this cult leader, and part of this film that he made was talking about the construction of a spirit world land, a sort of Disneyland amusement park, where people would go and see holograms of themselves floating above their bodies, and then they would go on a cable car that started in purgatory, went through heaven and hell, and then landed back at souvenir stands where they buy souvenirs from Tamba's cult. And apparently the books that he wrote about his cult were quite sexually graphic, but the films that he made were a bit more family friendly. But he sold his books and films in theatre cinema lobbies, along with videotapes and audio cassettes of his lectures. And so wrapping things up in this write-up about his movie, it said, despite Tamba's easy smile, the ruggedly handsome movie and TV star seems to be dead serious about life. If God ever banishes him from heaven, it will not be for good satire, but for bad parody. So, yeah. Wow. Tetsuro Tamba, yeah. And towards the end of his life, he sort of wasn't so involved with this cult. And he made a few films with Takashi Miike, including The Happiness of Katakuris and Gozu. He also had a cameo in a film called Blind Beast versus Killer Dwarf in 2001. But sadly, he died in 2006 at the age of 84. But yeah, okay, but wasn't really expecting all of that from Tetsuro Tamba.
Not at all.
Crazy life.
He'd be 1,000 kilometers directly above the earth right now, won't he?
Exactly, in his Disneyland paradise, yeah. Selling souvenirs and erotic books.
Strap yourself in again, because
here we go.
T is for Tanner, Bill Tanner, and I can't believe you didn't want to research Bill Tanner, your favourite character in the franchise.
My favourite character in all of the Bond films, yeah. Here we go, let's go.
So, William Tanner is an employee of the Secret Intelligence Service, MI6, and he is basically M's chief of staff. And, you know, originally in the novels, but then was put into the films for the first time in 1974. The Man with the Golden Gun, played by Michael Goodliff. Although only seen briefly. Can you remember him in this? I mean, you've probably got posters of him, but...
I've got a signed autograph, yeah. No, remind me.
So it's just at the beginning, in M's office, they discuss Scaramanga.
Who the bullet.
Has sent the bullet to MI6, yeah, with 007. Tanner just explains that Scaramanga's fingerprints are on the bullet and it's been verified by the CIA. And that's it. So it was just a short introduction to the character at that point. Played by Michael Goodliff, who was an English actor, born in 1914, died in 1976. And he was actually wounded in the leg and captured at the Battle of Dunkirk.
Wow.
And was incorrectly listed as killed in action at the time. So in his obituary was published in a newspaper.
Bond.
Yeah, exactly. But he wasn't, he hadn't deceased. He was a prisoner of war in Germany. And whilst he was there, whilst he was captive, he produced, acted in, and wrote plays and sketches to entertain fellow prisoners. And I think it was Desmond Llewellyn that did that as well, was it?
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
So they put on productions of Hamlet. Eichstätt. I'm not sure if that was where Llewellyn was as well, but yeah. Once the war had finished, he did carry on with his professional acting career. And he was best known at the time for a film called A Night to Remember. He plays the designer of the Titanic.
Yes, I was going to say I recognise that film.
And then he went on to be, you know, do a number of films. But he was in a lot of prisoner of war films as well. And again, this is something like you've lived it for real. Why would you want to live it again act it again? But sadly, he suffered from depression and he had a breakdown in 1976. So only a couple of years after shooting his scene in The Man with the Golden Gun. And he was actually rehearsing for a revival of Equus at the time. But he leapt from a hospital he was at, leapt from a hospital fire escape. Sadly, he committed suicide whilst he was a patient at the hospital. Yeah. So moving on to the next incarnation of Tanner, we have, do you know what film it is off the top of your head?
Oh, For Your Eyes Only.
Yes, of course you know, pretending you don't. Played by James Villiers. So in this one, Tanner gives Bond his assignment with Sir Frederick Grey, and they send him to go and find Hector Gonzalez. We also see Tanner at the end of the film when Margaret Thatcher is talking to the parrot. So obviously this one, which we covered in the For Your Eyes Only episode, January 1981, 4 months into the filming, Bernard Lee died and so couldn't play M. So out of respect, they didn't hire a new actor at that time and just rewrote the script and dished out the lines to Tanner or Frederick Grey, which meant that Bill Tanner had a bigger part than initially thought when the script was originally written. So James Villiers, he was an English actor born 1933 and died in 1998. he made his film debut in 1958 and was in a lot of films, British films. The Damned, The Nanny, Scarlet Pimpernel in 1982, Mountains on the Moon. But he specialised in portraying villains. That was his thing.
Nominative determinism. That's right. His name's Villiers. Play villains.
Villiers, yes. Yeah. Interesting that Villiers, the name Villiers was used then in Casino Royale.
Yes.
For M's chief of staff.
Yes. Yes, but, that's yeah. right. That's
I wonder
right.
if that's a coincidence or on purpose.
Well, I could be completely wrong, but I think there's a connection to the books as well in that Villiers is the name of the superchargers in Bond's car.
Right. Okay.
That's a bit of a deep cut, but I don't know if the two things are linked. But
So back to Tanner. Moving forward with Tanner, he returned. What film did he return in? Pretend You Don't Know.
Tomorrow Never Dies.
No, Goldeneye.
Goldeneye.
Yes. Goldeneye. Played by Michael Kitchen this time. So yes. In Goldeneye, we only see him briefly when the Goldeneye weapons are set off in Servania.
The evil queen of numbers, isn't it?
Yes, he gets told off because he calls her the evil queen of numbers and she's right behind him. Oh, so awkward.
Tanner.
Yeah. Then in The World Is Not Enough, he comes back and he's at the castle in Scotland at an MI6 debriefing. They get the hologram of
Reynard.
Reynard, yeah.
Yeah.
So he was meant to come back for Tomorrow Never Dies, but he was unable to do it. So they created the character of Charles Robinson, played by Colin Salmon.
Colin Salmon, yeah. So, we've covered recently.
Yeah. Also, Michael Kitchen was the first actor to portray Tanner in more than once in a film. So Michael Kitchen, born in 1948, English actor, best known for Detective Chief Superintendent Christopher Foyle.
Foyle's War.
In Foyle's War, which ran for 13 years. Yeah, he's been in, like, you name a British TV show, he's guest starred in it. You know, your classics, Inspector Morse, Touch of Frost, Pie in the Sky, Minder. He's a recognisable British face, isn't he, I would say.
Yes, definitely.
Moving forward and to the incumbent. In 2008, Tanner made an appearance in the Daniel Craig set of films, played by Rory Kinnear. So in Quantum of Solace, he is seen giving information about Craig Mitchell to Bond and M. And then he later tells M about Bond's actions whilst he's tracking down Edmund Slate. Tanner's actually the one that goes to Bolivia to help M stop Bond until she decides to trust him. Then in Skyfall, this is where he starts to get a bit more of a bigger role from this point on. He is tracking Bond's movements in Turkey and he informs M that he's at the Grand Bazaar chasing Patrice. And he's seen in, you know, he's a regular in the M scenes throughout this film.
Yeah.
Then Inspector, he escorts Bond to Q's lab on the boat, on the River Thames.
On the boat, yes. Yeah.
And then he plays a big part in bringing the Nine Eyes program down. And then most recently, No Time to Die, the Scooby-Doo gang, he's a member of them. So he's talking about Staffin and Heracles. He's doing a briefing with M to Bond. And then at the end, obviously, Tanner, Nomi, Q and M have a drink in Bond's honour after he's died.
He's got one of the best lines in No Time to Die, I think, when he says that Blofeld is as mad as a bag of frogs. Which I think is a great...
Yeah, that is. It's good.
Got to be Phoebe Waller-Bridge, that, I think.
Yeah. So Rory Kinnear, born 1978, English actor, and his dad was Roy Kinnear, who played Henry Salt in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory in 1971.
Great actor.
Yeah, fantastic actor who sadly died shooting a film on A Fell Off a Horse.
Musketeers movie.
Yeah. So Rory Kinnear, it's confusing, isn't it? Because their names are very similar. Rory Kinnear, he is quite interlinked into the Bond universe now. He's read two audiobooks. He did Live and Let Die in 2012, and more recently With a Mind to Kill, the Anthony Horowitz Bond novel. He's a pretty prolific actor. Again, very recognisable. Been in a lot of things. Been in Penny Dreadful, which of course was written by John Logan, produced by Sam Mendes.
Yeah.
Starred Eva Green, Timothy Dalton, Helen McCrory. So, you know, a lot of Bond alumni in that
Did
one.
Did you ever watch that?
No, I didn't. No.
He played like Frankenstein's monster.
Ah, okay.
Yes. It's very good, actually. I enjoyed the first series of it. I never didn't watch any more of it beyond that, but I enjoyed the first series. It was a bit like a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen type mashup thing.
Okay, well, don't mention that because that ended Connery's career. So
yeah,
I was watching an episode of Thick of It the other day, and he pops up in one of those.
Oh.
So you know, it is one of those where you can just see him popping up. He did that. I was a supporting artist in one of the. What's that political TV show with, is it Emma Thompson that's in it?
Oh, I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's set in the future where you've got corrupt government. It doesn't sound like the future, does it? But where you've got a corrupt government who, who are really like authoritarian. But anyway, I've been in a scene with him.
That's Have you really? Wow.
I was blurry. I was blurry. You know, he was in focus, but hey. But he said about playing the role in an interview to Looper. He said, I didn't even know film to film through Daniel's time whether or not I'd be back. I can see both things potentially being appealing. So they asked him about whether he'd be back post Daniel Craig. And he said, with a new Bond, they can try and create an entirely new world around him. Or like with Judi Dench, from Pierce to Daniel, they can try and create a sense of continuity. I can totally see the options ahead of them. And they just don't know which way they'll go. So, he seems to lean towards them not bringing him back. What do you think?
I'd like to see them come back, but I also concede the reasoning why they wouldn't. If they wanted to do another fresh start, then let's do it again. It would be a shame, though, because I think Rory Kinnear is a great sort of cornerstone of that MI6 team.
Mm.
I saw him do a. He was part of the 60 Years of Bond panel at the BFI, and he was a really charming presence on that panel. He's not a James Bond fan in the slightest. He knows nothing about the character or the history of the character, but he had a really strong rapport with Daniel Craig, I think, and that sort of really helped. But he was very, very self-effacing, very charming. I think he'd be a great brand ambassador if they were to bring him back.
Yeah, like a Desmond Llewellyn sort of role.
Yeah. Make him M next time. He could be promoted. I think he's got the gravitas for it.
Yeah, definitely. That's a shout. Watch this space.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Coffee? Medium sweet. Two medium sweet.
Thanks for listening. We hope you're enjoying the James Bond A to Z podcast. Remember, if you want to support the show, we have a coffee page at ko-fi.com/JamesBondA to Z, where you can buy us a coffee for just £3 or for £3 a month. Thanks for listening. Back to the show.
Is that all it does?
T is for Tibbet, so Godfrey Tibbet. Yes, I know, finally, back to where we started this podcast with Patrick McNee, the character played by Patrick McNee in A View to a Kill. Now, Godfrey Tibbet is a horse trainer / horse expert who sort of works with Bond on A View to a Kill. He gets introduced at the races when Bond goes to the races with M and Moneypenny and what have you. And Tibbet recognises that Zorin's horse is cheating. And so he goes with Bond undercover at Zorin's chateau.
The horse isn't cheating.
Well,
who are you throwing shade at the horse?
Okay. Zorin is cheating by giving his horse steroids. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tibbet goes with Bond undercover at Zorin's chateau in France. And he obviously has to pretend to be Bond's chauffeur. The Bond movies love a chauffeur. I don't know if you've noticed this, but they love to get chauffeurs in there. Anyway, and they discover that Zorin is using steroids to help his horses. But sadly, Tibbet meets his fate when he gets killed by Mayday, played by Grace Jones in A View to a Kill. But most important thing about this character is that it was Patrick McNee who played the role, and he's best known as John Steed in The Avengers. He was born Daniel Patrick McNee in London in 1922, and his father, also called Daniel, was a horse trainer. And actually, this is part of the reason why he was chosen to play this role in A View to a Kill. He went to boarding school and then Eton, which was paid for by his mother's lover, the rich socialite Evelyn Spottiswood. But he was later expelled from Eton for selling pornography and being a bookmaker. So reminiscent of the story of Fleming and Bond himself as well. But then he went into acting, and then he was called up by the military and he served in the Navy during World War II. Then he went on to work as an actor in America and Canada because he wasn't getting business here in the UK. But then when he was in London working on a documentary that he was producing about Winston Churchill, he landed the role of John Steed in The Avengers. A role that would come on to define his career. And in fact, when he joined the Avengers, he wasn't the lead character. Another actor was, but it ended up being Steed who became the lead in the series. It was his most iconic role, and he appeared in all but two of the 161 episodes produced between 1961 and 1969, famously working with a factory line of Bond girls, including Honor Blackman, Diana Rigg and Joanna Lumley. And he was also the central character in The New Avengers in 1976 and 1977. He returned to the world of science, spy-fi, as we could like to call it, when he took over the role of Sir John Raleigh, the number one at the UNCLE organisation for the 1983 TV movie The Return of the Man from UNCLE, the 15 years later affair, alongside Robert Vaughan and David McCallum. And I believe that's the one with George Lazenby in it as well, because that's the 83 one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was very, very good friends with Roger Moore in real life. And they starred together in a lot of different things, including 1976's Sherlock Holmes in New York, where Patrick McNee played Watson to Roger Moore's Holmes. And then also they appeared together again in The Sea Wolves in 1980. But it wasn't until Roger Moore's final Bond film before Patrick McNee joined the series as Tibbet in A View to a Kill. So the role was written, supposed to be as a jockey, but that was changed presumably to suit the older Patrick McNee, who gets to drive Cubby's Rolls Royce in the movie. And McNee, he called Tibbet a perfectly delightful part. But Patrick McNee's connection to the Bond films endured for a long time after the 1983 Bond film. He returned in 2000 to narrate the inside documentaries that appear on each and every one of the James Bond film DVDs. The only one that he doesn't do the voice for or doesn't do the narration for is the one for A View to a Kill. So that's a fun little fact for you.
The pair of them have great chemistry in A View to a Kill.
They really do.
It oozes off the screen. It's definitely one of the highlights.
Absolutely, yeah, 100%. Yeah, we're just going to wrap up to say that sadly, Patrick McNee died in 2015 in California at the age of 93. So a good old innings for a legend of the screen.
So T is for Tildesley, Mark Tildesley. He was the production designer for No Time to Die. And he's collaborated with a lot of high-profile directors. Danny Boyle, Michael Winterbottom, Richard Curtis, Ron Howard, Paul Thomas Anderson. So he's a big go-to. Most recently, of course, he's done The Banshees of Inisherin and Empire of Light. And he worked as a designer with Danny Boyle for the 2012 Summer Olympics opening ceremony that was called Isle of Wonder, which he actually won an Emmy Award for Best Art Direction. So in terms of his films, 28 Days Later, Constant Gardener, Trainspotting 2, The Two Popes and No Time to Die. You know, he's working on big projects. Yeah, and I think he's the one that started to tell us, if we remember in the No Time to Die episode, we talked about the initial script when Danny Boyle was part of the project.
Yes.
Because it was Danny Boyle that brought Mark Tildesley on board. And the producers were impressed with the work he'd done when Danny Boyle parted ways. So they kept him. But he was the one that started to reveal what the Danny Boyle script was going to be like, saying how out there it was, and that he's still trying to convince the producers to get Danny Boyle back on board, basically.
And he was talking about their building Siberian gulags and rocket silos and all sorts of stuff, wasn't he?
Yeah, and then they leaked the artwork, didn't they, last year?
Yes, that's right. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, so all those designs were leaked, and they're online now if you want to go and have a look at them. Some really impressive stuff what could have been that, you know, but we talk about this, how Bond goes back to its own vault and uses stuff from previous films that wasn't used. So who knows? Who knows what we'll get moving forward? But yeah, you can see in terms of No Time to Die, he's definitely used the history of Bond, you know, Ken Adam as an influence, hasn't he?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, we look at Safin's Lair on the Poison Island and all that sort of stuff. I think Mark Tildesley is a serious talent.
Yeah.
And I really, really hope that they make him a cornerstone of the future of the franchise. You know, make him the Ken Adam of the series. Make him the production designer du jour that they turn back to every time. Because I think he'd be a great asset to the series.
I agree, yeah. And I watched an interview with him on YouTube and I thought exactly that. I was like, he could be this generation's Ken Adam. You know, keep him for, you know, 15, 20 years.
Or whatever, yeah.
But yeah, so hopefully he works on the next one. But I've recently watched The Banshees of Inisherin, and it's an excellent film.
Yeah, it's next on my list.
So yeah, that's highly recommended. And I saw the trailer for Empire of Light, and you can see how much fun he had with that.
That's the Sam Mendes.
It's the Sam Mendes, yeah. Set in a cinema.
Yeah.
Visually looks stunning. So and the sets look amazing. So yeah.
Yeah. Right, T is for Trench, Sylvia Trench. She was the very, very first movie Bond girl, played by Eunice Gayson in Dr. No, and also returned to play Sylvia Trench again in From Russia with Love. So a big, important Bond girl in the history of the series, or Bond woman, shall I say. Sylvia Trench is introduced along with Sean Connery's James Bond in Les Ambassadeurs in Dr. No, where she basically invents Bond's catchphrase. Because she says the name that her name is Trench, Sylvia Trench, and she says Mr. and he replies Bond, James Bond, echoing the way that she said it. So she's basically the origin of that. She then seduces Bond, which I always think is a nice twist. You know, she's the one that does the seducing in this scene, and she turns up in his apartment wearing his shirt and playing golf. I just love that character moment for her in that movie. She then returns in From Russia with Love, one of only two Bond girls to appear in multiple Bond films as the same character, the other one being, of course, Lea Seydoux as Madeleine Swann. And she appears with Bond on a riverside date. Again, another great little character moment for her, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Bond is called back into action, unfortunately, cutting their date short. And there was talk of her returning to play the role in Goldfinger, but Guy Hamilton, the director of that film, decided against it. And I think that's the right thing to do. I think to make her a running joke in the movies would have been a bit of a disservice to her character. But it was a role that she wasn't intended to play originally, but I'll come to that in a second. I'll just talk a little bit about her history. But Eunice and her twin sister Patricia were born in Croydon in March 1928. Family moved to Surrey, then Glasgow, then Edinburgh. And this is where Eunice enrolled in the Edinburgh Academy. And she was a gifted singer. She trained as an opera singer. And in 1946, aged 18, made her professional debut in a role in Ladies Without at the Garrick in London. And she enjoyed a really successful career on stage and then later in television, and broke into the movies in 1948 in a film called My Brother Jonathan. But her big breakthrough came in 1958's Hammer horror film The Revenge of Frankenstein, which she played the female lead. And that movie was a sequel to The Curse of Frankenstein, which was Hammer's adaptation of the Mary Shelley book. So her connection to Bond begins when she starred in Terence Young's 1956 Warwick film Zarak. That was produced by Cubby Broccoli. And she knew Sean Connery personally because they were neighbours at the time. So when she was cast in Dr. No, she was having some success on stage playing the Baroness in the original London production of The Sound of Music in 1962, which ran for 2,000 performances. Mm. So she's one of the longest running cast members of that musical. And in fact, her theatre commitments meant that she could only sign up for a small part in the Bond film. And this is where the lines sort of crossed. So Lois Maxwell had been offered the role, offered the choice of playing Moneypenny or Sylvia Trench. And Lois Maxwell says she chose Moneypenny because she didn't want to appear on screen in a pyjama top, and thought that Moneypenny would have a longer running role. That's what Lois Maxwell says. But Eunice Gayson, in a separate interview, she said that she had landed the role of Moneypenny, but it was her theatre commitments, which meant she had to turn it down in favour of playing Sylvia Trench. So I'm not sure which side of those stories is the true story, but they definitely swapped roles at some point. Famously, Eunice Gayson did an interview where she said that Terence Young had asked her to help Sean Connery to relax on set while they were shooting the casino scene. She said, Sean had been told to be on the wagon, and I knew that because he refused to drink the night. And I knew that because he refused to drink the night before. So we went for lunch and I said, oh, I'm dying for a drink. Do you want one? He said, no, I can't. And I said, go on, just have one. I pretended to drink mine, but he more or less downed his in one. Then to my horror, he ordered another one. Not having had a drink for so long, it really affected him, but in a nice sort of way. All his nerves seemed to go out of the window. We went back on set and he said the name Bond, James Bond, in a beautiful way. And that was it. She helped to make that moment history. Sadly, Eunice Gayson, you don't hear her voice in Dr. No because she's dubbed by Nikki van der Zyl. I'm not really sure why, but you can hear her voice in the original trailer for Dr. No.
I was to leave for Jamaica in 2 hours. License to kill.
Now you maybe miss it.
You don't miss a thing.
I decided to accept your invitation.
I have to leave immediately.
Just as things were getting interesting again.
So after Bond, she appeared with Roger Moore in The Saint, and then also she appeared in The Avengers. But her last screen role came in 1972 in something called The Adventurer. But she did continue to be an in-demand stage actor after that. Her final run in the West End came playing the grandmother in Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods in 1990 to 1991. And then she did a pantomime, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, in 1992. Her daughter, Kate, cameos in Goldeneye in the casino scene. That's a nice little return to the series for Eunice Gayson, who sadly died in 2018, aged 90.
T is for Trevelyan, Alec Trevelyan.
Way, one of the big guns.
Absolutely. So, a character that is in GoldenEye, codenamed 006 originally. As an intelligence operative in the 00 section with Bond. And they were, of course, were friends. But then he went on, he faked his death and he adopted the identity of Janus. And he founded a crime syndicate, a Russian crime syndicate, going back to his roots. You know, he was chosen as the main villain in GoldenEye, and I think Bond is best when he meets his match.
Yeah.
And that's what they went for on this, and it worked so well. A great character. Of course, Sean Bean, he was auditioned to play the role of Bond, and that's why he got this role, because he was so good in his audition. They were really impressed, so they found a way to bring him on board into the franchise. And he said, it's a great honour to be asked to play a Bond villain, to be 007's friend. We part our ways and become enemies. It was very interesting and great to be involved in. So Sean Bean was also asked about, you know, the longevity of the Bond franchise, and he said it's amazing how they've managed to change along with the times and they keep it vibrant. I think Daniel Craig is brilliant as Bond. I remember at the beginning they're all saying, oh, he won't work, and I thought, yeah, you watch. I mean, Sean Bean, if anyone's gonna know, it's the sort of actor Sean Bean is.
Yeah,
he's gonna know Daniel Craig's capabilities. He worked with him in Sharp as well. The second episode of Sharp, Daniel Craig played the villain. But Sean Bean himself was born 1959. He's an English actor. He went to RADA, graduated from RADA, but born in Sheffield, and it's his Yorkshire accent that I think sets him apart from a lot of actors. Because no matter the role he's playing, especially when he played Sharp, from 93 to 97, the original run, and he kept his Yorkshire accent. The films he's been in, I mean, he is an absolute British icon of film and TV. Patriot Games, Ronin, Lord of the Rings, National Treasure, Troy, Flight Plan, The Island, Jupiter Ascending, The Martian, of course, Game of Thrones as well. But there's one thing that fans of his did notice,
Yeah.
Can you guess that what that was?
He always gets killed.
He always gets killed, yes. So they actually started... there's a website dedicated to this. It's called don'tkillseanbean.com. And it says Sean Bean dies in everything, which is a shame because he's awesome. This blog is dedicated to ending the untimely deaths of Sean characters in TV and film. Help us save Sean Bean. And he was asked about this in an interview, actually, and he said that he is... He's now looking at roles where it doesn't end in his demise, which is quite interesting. Maybe he's fed up of dying as well. But yeah, that Sean Bean. I feel like we could do an episode on Sean Bean just alone.
I think you could do a whole podcast series on Sean Bean, to be honest. Mm. Have you seen the TV series Time?
No.
Which is absolutely fantastic. I saw it's him and Stephen Graham in prison. Stephen Graham is the prison guard, and Sean Bean is a man who ends up in prison after accidentally killing someone in a car when he's drunk.
Right.
And I think because I've only seen Sean Bean appearing in sort of, minor movie roles, I sort of forgot what an amazing actor he is. And he is fantastic in that. If I can recommend one thing to watch Sean Bean in, like modern Sean Bean, it's that. Time. And I also saw him in another film recently as well called Possessor. Did you see that one, the Brandon Cronenberg one?
No,
he's only in it for a very short period of time, and I think he gets killed in that quite brutally. But he was great in that as well. He's great. He's really good.
Yeah, I've seen him in an episode of something where he plays a guy who dresses as a woman. Have you seen that? But I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, that rings a bell. That does ring a bell.
But he was absolutely fantastic in that as well.
Yeah. No, he's great. And I love him as Alec Trevelyan. And, as Ron knows, we love GoldenEye. And I think he's great. I do sometimes wish they hadn't given him this posh English accent in it, but...
Because it's one of those roles that stands out as the one where he's not doing his Yorkshire accent.
Yeah, yeah. But he's like an actor who I'd put him on like same level as almost like Gary Oldman.
Like
he's someone that's sort of he appears in a lot of stuff, but he's always really good.
He's great value. You always know you're going to get a good performance from him. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, that just about wraps up our tea episode before we embark onto the movies. There are a number of creatives and characters that we just want to mention here in our addendum section, which has become sort of tradition in these episodes. So I'll rattle through these in a bit less detail, and I'll kick things off here, Brendan, with tea is for Tarot, Miss Tarot, the character from Dr. No, played by Zena Marshall. Remember Miss Tarot?
Yes. Yeah, the one in the hotel room.
Yeah, the one who seduces Bond and then basically sets him up to be killed.
Yeah.
But in fact, he turns the table on both of them. It's a cool little role. But she, Zena Marshall, was of English, Irish and French descent, born in Kenya, but brought up in Leicestershire in England. Another RADA graduate. She had a number of TV and film roles, but stopped acting in the late 60s and sadly died in 2009, aged 83. That's Miss Tarot.
T is for Tattersall, David Tattersall, who's a cinematographer who has worked on many big budget films. And, he works with George Lucas, Martin Campbell and Lee Tamahori, who we've talked about earlier on in the episode. So he was the cinematographer for Die Another Day in 2002. Interestingly, also was the cinematographer for The Matador in 2005, starring...
Oh, great movie.
Pierce Brosnan, yes.
T is for Tamim, Janie Tamim. She's the French costume designer, award-winning costume designer, who's worked on many, many blockbuster films. Her Bond credentials include Skyfall and Spectre, but she also did the last six Harry Potter films, House of the Dragon, Black Widow, and also Judy, the Judy Garland movie. Talking about working on the Bond films, On the From Tailors with Love podcast, Janie said that Sam Mendes personally invited her to be the costume designer on Skyfall. And she said, I would never have done Bond if it were not for Sam Mendes. He asked me. He's somebody who, with whom I wanted to work. We wanted to work together. He was doing Bond. I did Bond. I always chose a director and I want to stay like that. I was to stay somebody who loved cinema and do costume for film, but it has to be a good film. So that's Janie Tamim.
T is for Tillen, Jodie Tillen, another costume designer, this time for License to Kill. Couldn't find that much detail about her, but she was very much behind the decision of the square suits look of Bond we get in this one. So also his tuxedo was acquired from the same place that used to dress big Hollywood acts like Fred Astaire in Hollywood, called Battaglia. Mm.
T is for Jean Tournier. He was a French cinematographer who was the DOP on Moonraker, also known for The Day of the Jackal. And he was brought on to do Moonraker after The Spy Who Loved Me's cinematographer Claude Renoir developed sight issues and wasn't able to return. Jean Tournier wasn't really able to find out much about him, to be honest. And he sadly died in 2004.
And T is for Truman Lodge. Truman Lodge is a character, the accountant and associate of Frank Sanchez in License to Kill. Played by Anthony Stark, who is an American actor. He played Jimmy in the Seinfeld episode called The Jimmy. Do you remember him? He's the guy that speaks about himself in the third person.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And that prompts George, doesn't it, to do the same thing.
Yes, yeah.
George is getting angry.
I
actually quite like Truman Lodge. It's a memorable name, isn't it? It's a funny name. He's a bit of a yuppie type, isn't he?
He is, yeah. He doesn't fit in that world that he's in. He's definitely out of his depth, isn't he?
Yeah.
And towards the end, you can see that he's realised, oh, I'm one of the bad guys.
Yeah. Oh, that's, well, that's it. I think that wraps up our tea episode. So thank you very much for joining us on this exploration of the characters and people under the letter T. We are next going to dive into our Mammoth Film Series special. So our next episode will be on The Living Daylights. Looking forward to doing that one, Brendan. Don't know about you.
Yep, it's one that I recently watched during the screenings in the cinema. And I like it more and more every time I see it, to be honest. So yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Can't wait to dive into that one. Then we've got a couple of Roger Moore films, a couple of Brosnans and the final Connery, not the final Connery, but our penultimate Connery to cover. So we're on the final stretch now. So thank you so much for listening. If you want to email the show with anything, you can get us on podcast@jamesbondatoz.co.uk. And if you want to get us on social media, Brendan?
@jamesbondatoz on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter.
Well, on that note then, it just remains for me to say that the James Bond A to Z podcast will return next week.
Ciao.
The James Bond A to Z podcast is hosted and produced by Tom Butler and Brendan Duffy, with music by Tom Ingemels and artwork by Helene Dolly. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please like and subscribe and leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Seems your hunch was right, 007. It's too bad the evil Queen of Numbers wouldn't let you play it.
You were saying?
No, I was just,
Good. Because if I want sarcasm, Mr. Tanner, I'll talk to my children, thank you very much. Good evening, 007.
Good evening,
Prime Minister's waiting for an update. Proceed with your briefing, Mr. Tanner.
George is getting upset!
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off My Rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin Marshall credit card bill.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.